It's time to find balance and be refreshed here on Every Heart, Every Woman.
Every heart, every woman.
Get ready for uplifting music and inspiring interviews.
Every heart, every woman.
Let's get motivated to move forward as we share our life experiences. Host, Harla Nivens.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Before we jump into our interview for today, we're going to set the tone with some live music. Sit back and enjoy.
Have you not heard that the Lord is the creator of the ends of the earth? He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. They shall mount up.
They shall mount up
on wings as eagles.
They shall run and never grow weary.
They
shall walk and never grow faint.
They that wait on the
Spirit,
renew
everyone. My name is Carla Nivens. I am your host for the Every Heart, Every Woman radio show on The Word 100.7 FM. And I want to welcome my good friend Vicki McMurray. She is here with me, as always, by my side and co-hosting the show today.
Hey, hey, I'm excited.
Welcome, Vicki. So glad that you're here with me. Every Heart, Every Woman radio show is a program of Love Ministries, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. You can find out more information about Love Ministries from their website, loveministriesbuilds.org. And Vicki and I are very excited because we are welcoming Queen Smith to the show. Welcome, Queen.
Hello. Hello. Thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, we're happy to have you.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. Queen is so sweet and so beautiful.
Oh, wow, yes.
We're gonna have a great conversation. Queen is a storyteller.
Yes, yes.
And so we're gonna just dive right in to getting to know your story. Queen, you grew up. Tell us about where you grew up and your family dynamics and all of that.
Yes, I grew up in West Africa, Cameroon, and I moved to the United States when I was 13. But I grew up in a large family in a 12-bedroom compound. I think my father only had six girls and the rest were boys. We say 18-plus children because we never met some of them. So you want to honor them, right? And my father was also polygamous as well, which was really normal in our culture and everything.
Okay.
So we had a huge family unit, extended family. It wasn't just mom, dad, and brothers. It was aunt. Everybody wanted input in your life. So I that's it. It's like a huge football team. And yeah, that was our dynamic back in West Africa, Cameroon.
I mean, I can't even imagine most of the time.
I've got two kids, and that's all I can even fathom dealing with. So even though I suppose you would have extra help if you have aunts and the like there to help raise kids. You said you didn't meet all of your siblings? So
I didn't get to meet all of my siblings, but through Facebook, I've been able to meet some.
Oh, wow.
Now, when I moved to this country, I didn't even know what the word daycare was because that's not a term that we use.
Okay.
And everybody just helps everybody.
Yes.
So that was like the dynamic that I came from. But yeah, we were really hands-on with our families, the aunts, even the neighbors. It really took a village to raise a child.
Yes, and I think I read on your website you were saying maybe that's where the term was even coined because it strikes such a strong tone to you because you experienced that growing up. And so you lived, you said, on a compound. So what I'm imagining as a compound would be a house with a big fence around it. You just had a really big yard. And is that kind of what we're...
Trees, little other houses, you know, the other women, the children, all of us. Yes.
And did you go to school or were you homeschooled?
Yeah,
how does
we went
that work?
To
I know nothing
actually,
about your country.
We took over classes, everything, everywhere we went, because my father had children in groups, right? So in my age group, it was like four of us. So we just took over everywhere we went, took over communion service, took over school. But yeah, we went to school. It's not the school system there. It's not like here. We actually call it like secondary school. It's not like grades or just different things like that. And the school system is way different and very disciplined and structured. You know,
So you're saying we aren't very structured or disciplined here in the U.S.
Mean, you know,
you're about
I
to
think
have a child
structure,
in the system someday.
But it was just very. When I moved here, I was like, oh wow. Okay, I don't have to march to school. I don't have to, you know, because we had to, like, it was just very discipline and just structure.
Okay.
You know, so,
right.
Yeah.
Did you wear uniforms?
Yes, we did. We wore uniforms. Our hair had to be a certain way, shaved, not braided, all of that, you know.
Wow.
So there's definitely a lot of free will and, yeah. Do what you want here.
Yes.
So did you have you had a close relationship with your mom?
Yes, I did. I did. It was funny because I had a close relationship with my mom and I also had a very close relationship with my dad.
Okay.
My mom was actually a doctor. So even when she left the home, she was actually the last wife.
Okay.
And when they separated, she would still come and serve as the doctor for the family.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, I got to see her, got to spend, you know, summer. Summer's like a big deal for us where there's no school. You get to go on holidays. We take it very seriously. So during the summer and stuff like that, I would get some time to spend with her. Mm-hmm. But even in between, having a large family, somebody is always sick and needs care. So
right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. She actually would be that person to provide that.
So she left the compound, but you stayed and
yes.
you were raised there.
Yes, ma'am.
Through
my father and the other stepmoms. But we weren't even allowed to call them stepmoms. We have to call them mother, you know,
okay.
like, so it wasn't like, we never looked at them as stepmoms mm-hmm. or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in my culture, we would not necessarily call them mother, but like you would say Che. Che is like mother in our language. And
mm-hmm.
then put the firstborn's name in front of that. So like one of them is
to
Che
identify.
Joe or
oh,
Che,
okay.
you know. So, yeah, mm-hmm. that's how we identify them. Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when did you leave?
I was 13 and my mom had this huge pool. It's something that we do in our country. It's called the American Lottery. It's for a diversity visa for the United States.
Oh.
And she actually got chosen for that, which meant that all of her children got to receive a green card for the United States. All of her children below age 21. And that's something that she had prayed for because she wanted all of us to go to medical school in America.
Okay.
So, yes. And so when she received that award or the lottery, all of her children were able to receive a green card, which was really a blessing because the only thing when I moved to this country that I couldn't do was vote, but I could do everything else.
Okay.
So, yeah, we had all of our papers when we came in.
Yeah. And then did you go into the medical field?
No, she got 2 out of 4. I think
okay.
she did really, really good.
Yeah,
I do too.
Yeah. And so I was actually going to go that path,
mm-hmm.
but, went to school, even like, during high school, Africans and, you know, even in my culture, Cameroonians were really big on being a doctor, lawyer, engineer. And if you're confused, do finance. That's how my parents would speak. And I remember when I was in high school and my uncle was like, now you make sure you're going to become a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, sure, okay. And then when I graduated high school, they were looking at all these big schools because school is everything.
Okay.
School is legacy, my family. And they're like, this is where you're going to go. And then when you have your kids, since you're deciding to be a doctor, then your kid can be an engineer. I'm like, what? They're planning my whole life for
wow.
me. So the only way I talked my family out of medical school, I was like, hey, you know what? I have like a stomach thing with hospitals. I don't really think that I just want to jump in there like
mm-hmm.
head first. So why don't I like try the nursing thing for a little bit, like work at a clinic, be a nurse at a clinic. So they were like, oh, yeah, sounds like a good idea. You can go become a nurse. And then after you do nursing, maybe you could apply for medical school. And I was like, yeah, sounds like a plan. So I went to UT Tyler
mm-hmm.
to because they have a great nursing school.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there and I was like, I don't want to be a doctor. And around the time where I was having that crisis, I don't want to say crisis, they called it crisis. I met my husband and he's African-American. So when
okay.
I called home to say, I don't want to be a doctor anymore, they were like, oh, that man, G-Mac, he's totally ruined our dreams.
He changed everything.
That's
he
right.
changed everything, but he had nothing to do with it. Like, he was actually holding my hand when I called my family.
Aww.
And he was like, this is really a big deal. I was like, oh, you have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now they know
mm-hmm.
that, that is not in my DNA.
Mm-hmm.
I finished my degree in psychology and then my master's is in human services. But they still have hope even after my 3-year-old. They're like, so when are you going to go to medical school?
So. Goodness. They're persistent. We can
very,
get them back.
Very,
very. Right.
And they love you and they believe in
they
you.
They do. They really do. So, yeah.
So so now, how is a family dynamic now with you here? Is mom still
yeah.
here?
Oh, my father and my mom passed away years
oh.
ago. They are both somewhere in heaven partying. My
yes.
dad is probably
yes.
bossing people around up there. I have a brother in Galveston. He's one of the smart ones.
Okay.
He is a cardiologist, and he made it. He made the cut. Yes. They don't bother him. And I have a sister, actually, she's graduating from medical school in New York in June,
all right,
which I'm going to be going to New York for that. And then my other brother, he does some fancy stuff with the military, contract work. Mm-hmm. Listen,
mm-hmm,
yes,
right,
that's his job.
I think all four of you sound very successful.
Yes.
Yeah, and he lives in Wiley, and then my husband and I and our one little girl live in Red Oak.
Yes.
So our family is kind of spread out. I have a stepbrother in Washington, a stepbrother in Canada, two in Germany, and the rest are back in Cameroon.
How so fun. We're just travel.
All over. Yes. We really are.
How
yes.
fun.
Yes. So tell us about storytelling. How did
we get there?
Yes.
Yes. So when you have a huge family, 18 plus kids, and it wasn't just us in the home too.
Mm-hmm.
My father would take a lot of people in. Like, we had situations where people would show up at our compound and say, hey, Mr. Kumfa, take my kid, because mm-hmm. he was known for being able to provide for all these kids and send them through school.
Okay.
So he would also take in friends' children and all of that. So it was just a huge family unit for us to say we had one-on-one time with our father. He was the only man in the home that worked. None of the kids work. None of the wives work. So he was like the main provider. And I noticed that we never lacked connection, because he had a way with stories. It was like at nighttime, we would all gather around the fire and eat, and he would just share stories. That's how we found out that, oh, yeah, you are human. Somebody actually gave birth to you. You're not this super creature. And we got to find out how the other moms got here, because we're just like, how did all of you people marry one man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there were all stories behind that, and there were all stories of our childhood. Because, you know, when you're a kid, you don't really know. When you're in this huge family unit, you don't really know, like, how were you as a kid?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of feel like you don't know your identity at times. And when my father was getting a little bit older, he would start mixing up our names, you know, all mm-hmm. of that. But it was through stories that he'll be able to say, hey, Olivia, this is mm-hmm. this is why we named you that, or this is the backstory of this. So that's how I really fell in love with stories. Like, oh, man, you can find out a lot about people if you just sit and hear where they're from, how they got to where they are today.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so very interesting.
So you're weaving those stories, though, now with God.
Yes.
And you're also, I want to start with that, because I do have some other questions, because you're doing some neat things with women. But I think when we were talking earlier, we didn't ask you, did you go to church, or what is that like in Cameroon? And so what's your connection between that, the storytelling, and your love of the Lord?
Yes. My father was Presbyterian, just mm-hmm. you go to church, starts on time, you sit in the back, you get your communion, you go back home. Right? We'll mm-hmm, all
right.
show up to church in the bus. Our communion, we took over,
I
like
I
said, football
that.
Team, everything.
I know, this is...
Because it was just like a long list. Come for this, come for that.
Yes.
That is actually my right. last name mm-hmm. before I got married. My name was Queen Bing Guasha Kumfa.
Oh,
then I
beautiful.
Got married, it was Queen Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So just plain.
Mm-hmm.
And so my father was just, you know, we went to a Presbyterian church, but my father, my mom was this whole... Pentecostal,
oh, wow.
deliverance,
mm-hmm.
everything was the devil, find out where he is, cast him out, you know?
Yes.
So I had that two dynamics
yes.
where, you know, but it was all Christian based,
mm-hmm.
where I got to see both sides. I couldn't run away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I went there during the summer, I knew she would have prayer meetings all week. And if I'm at home, I know that every Sunday I have to go to church. So I did have that foundation on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. So then you get here, you go to school, you have a master's degree, but you're out there talking about God and
yes.
and really helping people understand what a miracle they are. I was watching something on YouTube, I think, of you
oh,
speaking,
wow.
and I
yes.
thought it was beautiful.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, what is it you're doing now, and how did that all come about?
So, yes, because my family dynamic is so strict, and I think with my culture, we're very serious people. I push storytelling, like, really deep down, I'm like, nobody's going to take you seriously. You're supposed to go to medical school. You want to do storytelling. Like, what is wrong with
you?
It
doesn't add up.
It doesn't add up. Figure out your priorities. You're missing it somewhere. And so when I was in the process of getting my master's, I was actually doing life coaching. And it was really good. I liked it. Well, not going to lie. I didn't like it, but my clients liked it.
Right.
Although I could do it, I know my capacity. I can do things and I do it well, but sometimes I do it at the expense of like what I really, really want to do. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm good at something does not mean I have to take it on. Mm-hmm. So with life coaching, just because I knew I was good at it, I was like, oh, I'm just going to take it on. I'll take it on. Mm-hmm. I can do it with my eyes closed. But then I noticed that I will always, life coaching, it's so outcome oriented. And I will always cross that line mm-hmm. where if we set up a date and I'll come and say, I need this project from you on Tuesday, and you call me and say you broke your toe, my life coach stuff is supposed to be like, yeah, oh, so sad. How about Tuesday? Send me that paperwork. So I found myself like going between two personalities mm-hmm. because my real self, my storyteller self, wants to be like, girl, tell me what happened. Do you want to come over and eat some chocolate?
Right.
So I couldn't do that. And I felt myself always getting hung up in people's stories than the outcome. And it's not necessarily that life coaching is bad, but the way I'm wired, I was always like, oh man, I want you to tell me more about that part. Mm-hmm. But then it would just distract from other things. And then when I would try to be assertive, and then I would go home and tell my husband, I just feel so mean because I felt like there was something about that story. Mm-hmm. I should have dug deeper. And so anyways, when I got pregnant with my daughter, I was doing life coaching and I was like, ah, this is not me. It's working. It's working for them, but it's not working mm-hmm. for me. So I started thinking about it and I noticed that everywhere I would speak, it didn't matter what I said and what I thought really, really mattered in the conversation. Mm-hmm. People will always come back and tell me about the story parts. Mm. And I'm like, no, I'm trying to get away from this. I cannot label myself that, okay? I'm supposed to be a doctor somewhere, not a storyteller.
You're the doctor of storytelling.
So that's pretty much what happened. After I gave birth to Naya, my little girl, I was like, you know, you really need to be true to yourself that, yes, there is something about stories and you can forego everything to just really embrace that. And it's really okay. And so I stopped doing life coaching and I started saying I do storytelling. Now, a lot of people still get confused about it. Mm-hmm. I get calls or emails that say, hey, do you work with children ministries? Do you have puppets?
Right.
And I'm like, no. Then my family would be like, oh, God, what is happening to her? And I'm like, no, that's not what I do. But when I decided to go the story route, I knew that I wanted it to be my stories, your stories, and biblical stories. Mm-hmm. Because I always get hung up in the Bible stories. There's just something about them. I just view them another way. I can memorize scriptures, but nothing sticks to me like stories and parables. So with my storytelling, it's merging all three. It's applying biblical stories to real life, how it applies to life today. Mm-hmm. Not making it too complicated, just making it simple without robbing what the Bible really says.
That's amazing. So are you speaking at or storytelling at churches or?
Yes. Churches, women's events. I love women events. Mm-hmm. Small groups. I like small groups better for some reason. It could be in the form of a spoken word or it could be just a complete teaching. I do workshops on stories, like how to share your story with relevance, because I've noticed that a lot of times when people share their stories, it's almost like the scale is off. It's either life is bad, but you still have breath in your lungs. Life is bad.
Right.
Or life is just peaches and cream. And it's like, oh, wow, mountaintop mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's not this balance. And sometimes you don't even get to see God in their story. They don't even get to see God in their story. So with my workshops and different things that I do, it's just to get people to understand that stories are in our everyday. And you need to find a way to really share that with relevance. And if you take another look at your story, you might find things that you've missed in it.
Ooh, I like that. It's almost like, you know, really paying attention to God talking to you.
Yeah.
And pushing you and helping you realize all the little details in your life.
Yeah.
Because I think what we were talking about before we were even on air earlier, I was asking you about Cameroon. And then I said, wow, how different that must be coming to the States.
Yes.
And you just said there's too many choices here.
Yeah.
There's just too much stuff here, which is true. I know that
from
other people that have moved here from other countries. And so I think thinking about that and how our society is, how easy it could be to just really get lost in the stuff
yes.
and not the details of your life.
Yeah.
Your story could make a difference for someone if you were really paying attention to all of your details.
Like, we'd rather watch other people's lives and not even look at our own or assess ourselves.
That's powerful.
And we don't want to look at it, but it's our story.
Right.
I mean, we'll pay money to go to the movies.
Yes, we will.
And sit and then be like, oh my God, that was a great movie. And it's like, well, yeah, your story is great too.
Right.
But like you said, it's about those options. As a little girl, 13-year-old, being 13, I moved to this country and I had my first meltdown at Walmart because my aunt sent me to go get mayo. That was the first time I heard the word mayo.
Oh, goodness.
And I went and she was like, it's an aisle three. I don't remember what aisle number she said, and I went and it was three rows and I was like, well, which one do I pick? One says light, one says it was just
right.
And I stood there for the longest and she came, she said, I sent you to get mayo. You're still staring. He said, life is not that complicated, just pick one. But I was just hung up that how do people have so many cereal boxes, so many different brands, and everybody's saying mine is the best. There's just too much information coming to me at once. I was just like, I cannot. But like I said, in my country, two seasons. I was telling her that when I came to this country, now you have to learn four. I was like, okay, got it. Everything is just an extra step.
Right.
But I'm like, life is so simple.
Right, right.
Keep it simple, please.
Right, 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 right. Talk to us just a little bit. I think we're going to go to break. But talk to us just a little bit about just kind of how you followed the Lord into just, you know, kind of hearing his voice and saying, okay, I'm actually going to choose storytelling.
Yes.
And because, I mean, I'm sure there's so many women, you know, like you said, I can do a lot of things well, but I really want to do the thing that God has put me here to do. So tell us just a little bit about that decision.
Through prayer and then also seeing how my story, how he revealed my story to me and how it healed me. And then also noticing my closer circle when I'm helping them unpack their story, how they respond to it and how they find things that they didn't know was there. I think that's what made me say, no, there is something to this, because it seeps into every area in our lives and somehow we neglect it. But I think we're in a time where it's coming back up. I'm seeing it everywhere now.
Yes.
I'm like, so it makes me really happy.
Yes.
It makes me happy and hopeful to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I really think it's like through prayer and then also seeing how it's changed my life. And change the people around me that are now more present than always hoping for the latter day.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, yeah.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, we're going to take just a little short break and we will come back with more with Queen Smith.
Listening to Every Heart, Every Woman, the show where women find balance, peace, and inspiration. Now let's get back to the show with your host, Carla Nivens.
Welcome back to Every Heart, Every Woman radio show on The Word 100.7 FM. My name is Carla Nivens, and I have my good friend Vicki McMurray here. She's co-hosting with us today. Thank you again, Vicki.
Thank you for having me. Great conversation today.
I mean, all of these are great conversations, and so we wish that they could go on forever, and this is one of the ones that we would love to just keep talking and talking and talking. But we are speaking with Queen Smith today, and she is a storyteller, just blessed and fascinated by everything that that you have shared with us. We would just absolutely love it if you would share a story with us, and even if you want to tell us how you your process of coming up with the stories, and then share a story with us, we would absolutely love it.
Yes, I would love to. When I was a really, really, really little girl, one of the things that we had to do, although my father was very wealthy, he never had us sit around the home and not, you know, go get our own water or anything like that. And I would remember I would go to the well, get my water, come back home with my sisters, and they'll be playing with their dolls. And I would watch my father play this instrument. And women in my culture were not allowed to play it. And I would just sit at the balcony and I would just watch him. And one day he watched me watching him. And he said, "Do you want to play?" And I didn't respond because I wasn't really sure. I was like, "Can I? I don't know." They said we shouldn't play it, and I'm just a little girl. So what happened is my father started teaching me how to play this instrument, and it was called njang. It's made out of wood. And we would play together, and he would throw these big parties. And one of the parties, he was like, "Today you and I are going to play." And I'm like, "Wait, all these people are going to freak out because this has been in secret." And so when we started playing, some of the friends were very offended that he had a woman playing and at that a little girl because it was a man's instrument. And he would tell me, just focus on the beat. Don't even look up. Ignore their voices. So one of the guys that was very, very vocal would say, "She should not be playing the instrument." And one day my father asked him, "Is it your daughter? And is this your home? Do not tell me what to do with my daughter. If I want her to play, she would play." And I relate that to God because he really owns the whole universe. And we're waiting for like this affirmation from people. And God is saying, if I want my daughter to play, she would play whatever beat I have her doing in her story in this season of her life. She would do it because he owns the whole earth. He owns the whole compound. Mm-hmm. So who are we or the devil to come in and say, "You're not supposed to do this. You're not supposed to do that." One of the most interesting things about the story is we played together so much that one time I remember playing and I looked at the side of my eye and one of the guys that was so vocal about me playing that instrument was actually dancing to my tune.
Oh.
So if you play hard enough and you just work hard enough at the things that the Lord is telling you in secret, he will make it to where people one day, it might not be today, would see it for themselves. So that's one of the things that my father taught me. It doesn't matter what you want to do. You would do it because I am your father. And just like God says, you would do it. And that would be the end of story for it. So that is one of the stories that I love to share with women because that really marked me for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. How beautiful. Yeah.
And I see what you mean. I mean, you... You know, there are so many things in our lives that we can take and that we can learn from and learn the Lord's nature through what we are experiencing in life, but we pass right by them.
Yes. And we think it has to be something big. I hear people say, "My story's not big." And I'm like, every day is a story that you can pull from. When I was little going through that, I didn't think, "Oh my God, one day this is marking me."
Right.
Yes.
But I know, me not even becoming a doctor, I know I've always been marching to my own beat. I always know that. And I always think about this story. I'm like, "Yeah, you've been playing a different tune for a long time."
Yes. Man, that is wonderful. I believe it was, I can't remember, right now it's escaping me, who we were speaking with, and she said that that we have to pay attention because the Lord is always preparing us.
Yes.
Like he's always...
I feel like it was Tisha.
Okay. He's like...
With her experiences, not knowing the things, when you hear her show, she's talking about those experiences that made no sense, why some things were happening to her, and yet they were all in preparation for what she's doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you just look again.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important for us to even write down. Do you spend a lot of time journaling?
I do write down, or sometimes I just record if I think of something.
Same. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just record it and I listen to it. Or if a memory comes to me out of nowhere, I want to know why. That's one of the things that I teach the women. I'm like, they're just random things that come up and you need to pause and say, why did that come up?
Right.
And look into that again, you know? At one of my workshops.
I think that's a really good habit, and it's honestly one that I'm trying to hone myself because we do have so many thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, God is constantly, he is
always speaking.
Yes, always speaking, and I'm not always listening, but I am trying to really voice memo on my phone, you know, if I think of something that he has told me. I'm not as good at journaling, but I see the importance of it.
Yes.
Very much so. So it's just, you know, and having those quiet moments. And for me, mostly lately, it's in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And I might not have the radio on. I'm just in there. It's just he and I, and we're talking. And, you know, he's throwing stuff at me left and right. And I'm trying to remember it all and take it in. And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Phones are ringing and people are
wanting
you.
Right. Right.
You know, it's tough.
And the thing that I love about your story is the creativity, because you know the Lord is so creative, and He just light bulbs are just going off in my head as you are telling your story that you know, because you were supposed to be a doctor.
Yeah,
and we get all the way to storytelling.
Right. Well, no, she's the doctor of storytelling.
She's the doctor of storytelling.
I receive that.
Okay, good, because I believe that wholeheartedly, that you're definitely the doctor of storytelling. And, you know, again, your life experiences have absolutely prepared you for this day. God knew. God was prepping you. And he is. He's so beautiful and creative.
And the stories, when I do my workshop or when I have my open seat and all of those things, I tell women or just whoever is there, if you don't think you have something to say, you're already defeated. Because I meet people and they're like, I don't have anything to say. And that's the first thing with storytelling. You have something to say and someone needs to hear it. I don't care if it's one person,
because
it's always that one person.
Right.
But you have something to say, and which that is the first step, and tell the truth.
Yeah. Right, tell the truth, and know that you are perfectly unique
in
the way that God made you, and you absolutely do have a story. Well, you mentioned something that I wanted to lead into, which was tell us about Open Seat.
Yes, Open Seat was also birthed after I had my daughter. I had a lot of birthings. It was actually a ministry that I carried in my heart for 8 years. Mm-hmm. I always told the Lord, please don't make me do this. If you give it to somebody, I would help them, but I don't want to start anything.
Yes.
And he just didn't let it go.
Mm-hmm.
So Open Seed was just birthed out of my love for story, people, and community. And so we just gather once a month. It's just women, random women. Some of us didn't even know each other. Once a month around the table, we share our stories, we eat together, and we form community. Not surface, but just true community. If it's 10 women, maybe not all of those 10 women might have that deep level of relationship, but they might connect with somebody else there.
Right.
And they just form that relationship. And we've been doing that for the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they also learn about storytelling. I do teach storytelling there, but like on one-on-one, when one of them wants to share, we call that our unfiltered session.
Okay.
You pick what you want to share.
Right.
And then we just kind of help you shape it. That's all. We're not going to tell you. And so that's called unfiltered. And the other thing that we do with Open Seat is our wisdom session, where we invite someone from the older generation to just tell us wisdom stories, because we're trying to figure it out too.
Yes. And even though you haven't heard this yet because your daughter's three, maybe you've heard this from your kids. We've probably told our parents this, but come on. My kids would say, Mom, you're old. You don't know what it's really like.
It's different nowadays.
Yes.
But it's not. And when you have someone who has a seasoned life, who has a beautiful wisdom, and when they start sharing it, you're like, oh,
yeah,
it's
right.
really
Save
not
you a lot
any
of
different.
Heartache and everything. Yes, no. So that's what we do. And so we keep it small. to kind of keep that safe environment feel. But now once a year, we want to host a larger gathering where we could empower women to do the same for their community. So it's not about adding to Open Seat, but to see more of these little fires around. Yes. Ah. And so that's why we did the Crown and Story. Our normal gatherings is like probably 12 of us or 12 to 15 of us, but our first Crown and Story was like 70 women, and it was just all about stories that before you even unfolded one chapter of your life, you were already crowned. Because we noticed that a lot of people would share their stories with shame attached to it.
Yes.
And it was just a whole lot of shame. So we just wanted to come up with a way where people could really share from a place of freedom than, oh man, I had a bad past, or because we all have that.
Sure, we do. Right. We're not the sum of our mistakes. Mm-hmm. And God certainly doesn't look at us that way. So how do we get involved with?
Email, DM. We are on Instagram. It's called Open Seat on Instagram. I'm on Instagram as well as Queen K. Smith. Mm-hmm. I don't even.
You are. You're Queen K. You are. Yeah. I just started following
myself.
You.
Right. But really.
So you're saying Open Seat, though, is usually around 10 or 12 people. Mm-hmm. What if I wanted to do an Open Seat?
Oh, we don't turn anybody away. Okay. Like, it's so funny how it all works out. It still stays small. We've had people move. One of our dear friends just moved to London. So it's like it's we never turn anyone away. If somebody messages us and say, hey, I haven't seen any advertisement recently, are you guys still meeting up? And we're meeting Saturday. We say sure.
Okay, you know? Great.
And they get to come meet us.
Oh, that's
great. That is wonderful. You said something and that sounded just like myself. The Lord had given me Every Heart, Every Woman, and I had been just writing down the words Every Heart, Every Woman for years.
Wow.
Before I did anything. Then when I finally got in gear, Vicky joined me and we started a small group gathering through Love Ministries with women that had grown up in our program. And we also invited other friends to make it diverse so that we would have women from all walks of life just sitting around the table sharing in community. And so my question is, what if we wanted one of our Every Heart, Every Woman ladies gatherings, what if we wanted to do it as an open seat? Is that an option?
Yes, I would bring my tablecloth.
Oh,
I would help out. I would set up, and I could even do a story thing. I could teach about the stories, the steps.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a workshop called Long Story Short.
Okay.
And it's not about cutting your story short necessarily, but it's just sharing it with relevance that I do. And if that's something, I can do it. I can come out and just love on the women and just set it up to have that feel. So, definitely.
Well, we would love that. And absolutely. And I love what you said earlier about how so many women come with shame attached to their stories.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And just being able to teach somebody to tell your story and know that your story is beautiful, even in the midst of hot, messy mistakes that we've all made a lot of. We're all hot, stinking messes, first of all, every day when we wake up.
Yes.
So, you know, and it's by God's grace that, you know, at least me make it every day. But just being able to help them see that, let's move past that shame and let's focus on, okay, some mistakes were made, but let's look at that path and how that's gotten you to this moment. Mm-hmm. I think is so beautiful.
Yeah.
And important to see yourself that way instead of with the shame.
The Lord, he said in the Bible, who do people say that I am? He wanted to know the stories being told about him.
Yes.
And then what he did was he didn't go and confront. He just did what he was created to do.
Right.
So it's like he was changing the narrative without making a fuss about it.
Right.
So I tell people, if you know where you are in life and you hear a false narrative, because that happened in my culture too. My father will always say this proverb, unless the lion learns to share his story, the hunter will always be glorified. So if you do not share, someone is going to share it for you.
Right.
And they might not have the proper narrative. How many of us have ever heard something about us and you're like, that's not true.
That's not so mad at me.
But what Jesus did was he didn't go like chase people down. He just said, oh, no, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. And when I step into people's life, I will restore it like their adulterous mm-hmm. woman. You know, she was brought up. It was like, this is a story and this is what happens. But like with Jesus, he restores that. Like he right. takes the shame off it and he says, where are your accusers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that you can go free and say, okay, I did this. I no longer do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I look at stories, not necessarily like just deep, dark secrets, but just that freedom to say, I at least have the ability to bring this to light.
Right.
Yes. You know?
Right.
Oh, and I think that's empowering.
It is.
I think when we get stuck in shame, we're stuck. It's like being yeah. stuck in the mud. And yeah. so when you can just lift that veil off yes. of them, mm-hmm. of anyone, and feel the freedom in yes. your story and not feel the shame attached to it, I'm excited about it.
Yes. So I want to know about the food. Now,
oh, yes.
you are a foodie, and yes. we all love food.
Mm-hmm.
So what at the open seat events, like, tell us about?
We eat, we mm-hmm. get different restaurants to cater.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because food tastes better with people.
That's there you
just,
go.
It does.
That's just the bottom line.
Yes.
So we just get like different places to cater for us, and we get to eat together. There's just something about breaking bread. And when you're eating, it's almost like when you're eating with someone, their defense is down.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. It's just more relaxing when mm-hmm. food is involved. So we get different people to cater our food. Sometimes we make it ourselves, but that's a lot of work at times.
Mm-hmm.
So we just get people to do it for us. And it's just a beautiful thing. There's, I don't know, another
sitting
way to
the
do.
Table and just.
Yeah. And that's yes. what we do. We set mm-hmm. the table. We mm-hmm. eat. Almost like a family. Even for our larger gathering that we just had, we made sure that the location we had a kitchen mm-hmm. to where the women went to the kitchen and got their food so that they felt like they were in a house, you know,
like
rather
that.
Than being served.
Yes.
I think food brings people together. If you walk in the building mad, if somebody doesn't have food, you just kind of like relax and say, you know, life is not that serious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let me just eat, you know?
Yes.
So
yes.
It's just a way to disarm people.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
I think that's brilliant. And also when we're eating, you're in the present.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. you have to sort of stick with the
exactly.
present.
Exactly, yes.
Because you're
yeah.
eating. It's an action that's
absolutely.
Current. So
right.
I don't know.
Well, I am so excited.
Me too.
I mean,
thank you.
This has been good. And thank you so much, Queen.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yes.
I really enjoyed the off and on conversation.
Oh,
this
yes.
has just been a blessing for me.
Oh,
thank
yes.
you.
Yeah,
well,
it's,
us as
it's
well.
Been a blessing for us. And so of course, my brain is thinking.
Yes.
You know, I was like, when
watch
we
out.
Do that, I know. So when we do ours, Every Heart, Every Woman,
mm-hmm.
we might wanna make it a radio event. We might
oh,
want to do. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, that would be awesome. So much fun.
Yeah.
Okay,
dream
so we'll,
big, girl.
Yeah,
let's do
there
it.
We go.
Yes.
We'll get that together. So we'll get more information about that. And
yeah.
Everyone, get in contact with Queen and
I think it's www.openseat.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and then queenkaysmith.com. That's it
on social
mm-hmm.
media.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Sign up for the Open Seat events,
thank
and
you.
Then of course the Crown and Story gatherings.
Once
I guess the next
month,
one
once a year.
Mm-hmm. Once a year.
The next
okay.
one would be
in April.
In
oh, okay,
of next
we have a while
year.
To wait.
Of next
okay.
year, yeah.
Okay.
So, right. So, you got to get into the Open Seat events, everyone.
Right,
so, get in contact with her. As always, you can follow Vicki and I on social media at EHEW Radio. And our website is EHEWradio.com. Get in touch with us and get into the conversation
mm-hmm.
so that we can include your thoughts and your wants on the radio show. So, everyone, thank you so much for joining us. We are Every Heart, Every Woman Radio on The Word 100.7 FM. We are a program of Love Ministries, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. So get in touch with them on their website. And also join us back here next Sunday at 6 p.m. And we truly, truly, truly hope that you have a wonderful week. We'll see you next Sunday at 6.
Every heart, every woman. Ooh.